by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make the heaven the middle of it. Rest make the heaven the middle. We are. Rest make the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off the program with Greg Reese in one of his overviews. And then we're going to immediately go to an interview that Alex had with Dr. Darren Beatty, and he's written a recent article in Revolver.News that I would recommend that each and every person out there in the audience, listening audience, go into Revolver.News and read. And he breaks down a possible involvement of our federal government with what went on January 6th. So that's very, very important. Here we go with Greg Reese. And then I'll come back in and we'll set it up for Darren Beatty's interview that Alex had. Here we go next.
Dr. Reiner Fulmich is the public frontman for an international team comprised of hundreds of lawyers and medical experts who have begun legal proceedings over the CDC, the WHO, and the Davos Group for committing crimes against humanity. The protocol for the PCR test given by the WHO and the CDC was knowingly set to a level that guaranteed 100% false positives or false negatives. So there is no pandemic. This is all about getting people to take the shot. Their argument is that we are at the very least being subjected to an illegal experiment, and at the worst, global genocide. Dr. Fulmich points out how the experimental jab is in clear violation of all 10 of the Nuremberg Codes, which carry the penalty of death for those who violate them. Number one, voluntary consent is absolutely essential. There should be no intervention or any element of force, fraud, deceit, duress, or any form of constraint or coercion. By definition, a vaccine must provide immunity to the virus, protect recipients from getting the virus, reduce deaths, infections, circulation, and transmission of the virus. We are told the experimental jab does none of these, yet they fraudulently call it a vaccine. As far as duress, constraint, and coercion, it's everywhere. If you want your life back, get the shot. Number two, the experiment should be such as to yield fruitful results unprocurable by other methods. The most fruitful method would be a healthy immune system, which can be achieved through good health and natural supplements such as vitamin D, vitamin C, and zinc. But the people are not being told this. In fact, those who point it out are being vilified and silenced. Number three, the experiment should be designed and based on the results of animal experimentation. This experimental jab skipped animal testing. Number four, the experiment should be so conducted as to avoid all unnecessary physical and mental suffering and injury. According to official reports, there are already thousands of deaths and over 250,000 injuries from this experiment. Number five, no experiment should be conducted where there is an a priori reason to believe that death or disabling injury will occur. Past trials have shown a strong possibility that these new spike proteins will cause a body to attack itself. This is known as antibody-dependent enhancement, or ADE. And recent doctors have blown the whistle that this could end up killing everybody who's been vaccinated in the next 2 years. Number six, the risk should never exceed the benefit. COVID-19 has a 98 to 99% survival rate. less deadly than the seasonal flu. The experimental jab is already the most dangerous vaccine in VAERS 30-year history. Number 7, proper preparations should be made and adequate facilities provided to protect the experimental subject against even remote possibilities of injury, disability, or death. There were no preparations made. There are no facilities. The subject shows up for their shot and goes home. Number 8, the experiment should be conducted only by scientifically qualified persons. This experiment has been exclusively run by politicians, the media, celebrities, and big pharma bureaucrats. Number 9, the subject should be at liberty to bring the experiment to an end. Thousands of medical experts have attempted to end this madness, and their voices continue to be silenced. Number 10, the experiment must be brought to an end if resulting in injury or death. And yet, the experiment pushes on. Once again, those who violate these international laws are subject to the death penalty. Legal proceedings are moving forward and evidence is being collected. Whistleblowers are directed to contact the international team at www.securewhistleblower.com. This is likely the biggest crime ever committed against the world population. And the question is, do we still have a judicial system to exact justice? For Infowars.com, this is Greg Reese.
Next coming up, good, do we have a judicial system? Boy, I don't know what we have anymore. But a point that Dr. Darren Beatty makes is that if these intelligence agencies that dominate us now, if they continue to have, their say and their influence in our government and our politics, then things are over with. So Dr. Darren Beatty is interviewed about the possibility of our federal government being involved in January 6th on some level. Now, he has an article on revolver.news, and I would recommend that each and every one of you go to that and read that. Here we go with that interview of Alex with Darren. Here we go next.
The American people deserve the truth, no matter how dark it is, as to what really happened on 1/6. And as I say, this is not just on behalf of Ashley Babbitt, who was shot in cold blood by somebody we still don't know. It is not just for the hundreds of prisoners being detained and abused unjustly for their political beliefs and participating in a political protest. It's actually bigger than that. It's for the 70-plus million people who voted for Trump, or really any American who dares challenge the corrupt ruling class. Because all of us, you, me, everyone, we've all been declared potential de facto domestic terrorists by our own government. And as a means of promoting that narrative, they seize upon a certain story of 1/6. And to get to the bottom of that story, to get to the truth of that story, I think we need to ask the following simple question. Was this the result of an intelligence failure? As Christopher Wray said, they just didn't have any idea anything was going to happen. And so that there you go. Or was this a result of an intel setup or a counterintelligence set up?
The headline last night was incredible. Tucker Carlson tonight, FBI behind the January 6th insurrection. It's all coming up with the investigative journalist, Darren Beatty, who broke it in the major publication, investigative publication, Revolver. He is a former professor of political science for Duke University who went on to serve in the White House as a speechwriter and policy aide to Trump. He is now founder of Revolver.News that is doing probably some of the best investigative journalism out there, period. I would even say he gives Greenwald a big run for his money. Very, very fair. I would say nonpartisan, scathing. And I've been quite the expert just covering it for 27 years on false flag terror. I cut my teeth on Oklahoma City, interviewed survivors, police officers, you name it. That was a false flag. It appears they're cooking up something even bigger. So, Doctor, it's good to have you here with us. You were on Tucker last night. Congratulations on your great work. You've got the floor for the rest of the hour, if you can be here, to just walk through your article, walk through the FBI informants inside, and then I witnessed a lot of this now and can confirm that they were clearly trying to set us all up, and this didn't go as far as they had hoped it would. So thank you for joining us for this incredible story.
No, it's an honor to be here, and thank you for covering this. I think this is the most important story right now. I've been told this Revolver.News investigative piece, it is the most important, and it is the darkest investigative work they've seen in years. And this piece, thanks to Tucker, thanks to Steve Bannon, and thanks to you now, this piece is becoming the biggest story in the country, and for good reason. The American people deserve the truth, no matter how dark it is, as to what really happened on 1/6. And as I say, this is not just on behalf of Ashley Babbitt, who was shot in cold blood by somebody we still don't know. It is not just for the hundreds of prisoners being detained and abused unjustly for their political beliefs and participating in a political protest. It's actually bigger than that. It's for the 70-plus million people who voted for Trump, or really any American who dares challenge the corrupt ruling class. Because all of us, you, me, everyone, we've all been declared potential de facto domestic terrorists by our own government. And as a means of promoting that narrative, they seize upon a certain story of 1/6. And to get to the bottom of that story, to get to the truth of that story, I think we need to ask the following simple question. Was this the result of an intelligence failure? As Christopher Wray said, oh, they just didn't have any idea anything was going to happen. And so there you go. Or was this a result of an intel setup or a counterintelligence set up? And we can get to that by asking the following precise question. Of the three main groups, the three main so-called militia groups most closely associated with 1/6, at least in the government sides, Proud Boys, Three Percenters, Oath Keepers, to what extent were those three groups infiltrated by government agents up to and on 1/6? And to put an even more fine point on the issue, how many, if any, of the unindicted co-conspirators who enjoyed senior positions in these key militia groups remain unindicted on account of some prior relationship with the federal government? These questions, they create a thread. And I believe, Alex, we pull this thread, the ugly truth about 1/6 and about perhaps our entire country will reveal itself. And this is what this piece is doing and what I hope it will continue to do.
And I know in your piece, you're mainly focusing on the buildup to the 6, what happened on the 6, and then since then, and it's extremely powerful. I've read the piece now 3 times. But the bigger area is your knowledge that was very impressive to me when we had a talk a few weeks ago off air about the pedigree of the groups in this Justice Department that were holdovers who had done similar things before. And I know that kind of puts the cart before the horse, because then they'll, you know, bring up those issues instead of this current one up front. But the past behavior of these people at Ruby Ridge, Waco, Oklahoma City, and just everything they do, the pathology of them doing this over and over again, plus the last 20, 30 years, the FBI behind almost every other major staged event, be it white supremacists, you know, Islamists, any of these groups. And I'm not saying there aren't some crazy militias or some crazy white supremacists or a lot of crazy Muslims, but then there's the FBI always holding their hand there. This is a very well-known phenomenon.
Absolutely. No, you make a great point, and that's why it's so exciting to be on this show, because, as you said, you cut your teeth on this precise narrative that the American people need to understand. And I think it's unfortunate that there's been so much distraction related to 1/6, and I'm really glad that this Revolver News piece has helped to clear that up. In my view, it's not about, oh, whether it was Antifa, this or that. It's bigger than that. Don't ask whether it was Antifa. Was it the federal government? What did the government know?
Antifa was there in a foundational level support role and have been tipped off that this was about to happen. We have him on video, Jaden X Singh. But exactly, that becomes a distraction because
Yes, but this gets into detail that maybe for another report. But just quickly on the Jaden issue, what was he? Was he actually Antifa, or was he himself some kind of operative or informant? So I think we need to really be precise about what we're saying. And really, all roads lead to this question: is what did the government know? When did they know? Was this a setup? That is the key that unlocks this. And you can go all the way back to J. Edgar Hoover. Every single incident, like you were saying, from Waco, Ruby Ridge, Oklahoma City.
Dr. Green, stay there. We've got plenty of time. Let's get into that. And I totally agree. You're right. Jaden X isn't really Antifa. He's whatever they need him to be, and he actually brags about that and has that background with Anderson Cooper and these weird international journalists that are in conflict zones. I would say CIA. We'll be right back. Stay with us. All right, folks, we're back live with Dr. Darren J. Beatty, and he, of course, is with Revolver.News, the founder of it, a doctor, a professor of political science, and, of course, he went to work at the White House with President Trump as a researcher, strategist, speechwriter. And he's here now quarterbacking the resurgence of investigative journalism. I want to explain something. This Revolver story and what they really did at the Capitol is the whole future of America one way or the other. It's as big as the Wuhan lab. Why is that important? Because it's all the same globalist group using crises to take control. And they are saying the whole posture of the U.S. military and the CIA, its main focus is not the Middle East, is not China, is not even the Russians, it's now us, and branding us all terrorists and white supremacists to then start a war with us and to start false flags as the trigger for that, the Capitol being the first. So this is very historical. Anybody that studied history knows it repeats. So obviously the professor understands that because he's researched it. But so when you know what you're doing, when you've researched this, it's all crystal clear. And they're even telling you what they're going to do in that montage earlier, Dr. Professor. You saw us show just a small taste of them saying the new enemy is the American people. A white supremacist is a capitalist, a Christian, a conservative, someone that loves our country. And so this is a great way for the Democratic Party to outlaw its opposition. So we've got the rest of the hour. We got a break coming up, longer segments coming up, but wherever you want to start, back with Jaden X, or January 6th, or the FBI operatives inside, or what you think's coming in the future, because this story is the most important because it's the entire program this corrupt deep state has launched.
Yes, no, I agree with all of that wholeheartedly. And I'd like to say that investigative journalism is nothing if it's not attached to a narrative. The investigative work is only important insofar as it's connected to an important narrative. And the narrative here is crucial for everyone to understand. January 6th, it's not just about Babbitt. It's not just about the people indicted. It's about all of us. Because the biggest trend, the most terrifying trend, the most important trend in politics that Revolver.News has covered in meticulous detail is that our national security apparatus in this country has been politically weaponized, repurposed, and redeployed domestically to silence, suppress, and destroy the energy associated with Donald Trump's victory in 2016. It's as simple as that. And the narrative for 1/6 that the government has seized upon, that the fake media has seized upon, and so forth, is entirely for that purpose, to serve as a pretext to advance this new domestic war on terror, this new Patriot Act, which, as opposed to the old Patriot Act, which was horrible, this new Patriot Act is tailor-made to attack patriots.
And the left is, we're talking hundreds of thousands of tweets a day just of my name saying, arrest me, kill me, tear me apart, about Trump, about Ted Cruz, yeah, about Josh Hawley. Anybody that says, hey, we should investigate election integrity, something the Democrats always agree with before, should be put in prison because we're terrorists. And they have like army officers online saying Alex Jones is a terrorist and needs to be taken out. And Twitter is allowing that. And I'm not I'm not here bringing myself up because I want to be a victim. It's crazy to watch organized calls for violence like this. This is dangerous.
No, it's absolutely the case. And I think if your listeners can take home one thing, first of all, I encourage them, go to revolver.news, read the full report. And I think you have a great audience. You have a very big audience. And I'm calling upon them to help this story become the biggest story in the country. It's got the momentum. This piece deserves to be the biggest story for the sake of all of us. Because as I said, we deserve to know the truth about 1/6. We need to keep in mind, though, the narrative. The narrative is that the national security state has been weaponized against the American people here. And frankly, and I think you know this, and you've known this for a long time, all of politics in the United States is basically going to be fake and performative unless and until we keep our national security agencies under control and in their proper place. If we don't do that, we don't have a country.
And so Dr. What you're alluding to is what came out right before Obama left, or I guess it was a few years before he left, about 7-8 years ago. They passed a federal law. He also signed executive orders to turn the CIA and other disinformation groups loose domestically, which have been illegal previously. We have the Washington Post headlines, propaganda legalized by Obama. That's what you're hitting at, right? It's these groups that are doing this that are then organizing the mainstream media to engage in this weaponization.
Right, absolutely. And we need to bring the intelligence apparatus, the national security apparatus, to heel, or we don't have a country. And other than that, frankly, all the political discussions we have are fake performative distractions. We're not going to have politics in this country in the real sense until we get that situation under control. And that is what I think is at stake in this 1/6 piece.
In response to Dr. Darren Beatty's article, okay, and I'll put up the full click off for the full interview that he had with Alex. Now, what I'm going to do next is I'm going to play President Putin's response and at his news conference to some of the issues that did occur on January the 6th. But also, he denies that he's taking, you know, legal action against some of his political enemies. We know that's just a bunch of, BS. So, because Russia is not the same as the United States. The United States still has far more freedom and so forth than Russia has at this particular point. And with Putin in power for a long period of time, if you stand up and go after him politically, you can get in trouble very easily. But what I want to do is play about a 12-minute clip of his news conference to give a taste to our listening audience of the way he's thinking. And he did call us out on the January 6th of the lady, Ashley, Bobbitt, that died there. And I think she's the only one. And then they blew this thing up, the authorities did, to make it an insurrection of the people there. And this is totally false, and there could have been some government involvement, federal government involvement. So anyway, here we go with Vladimir Putin's news conference at Geneva at the summit that he had with President Biden just recently. Here we go next. One additional note that I forgot to add before we play this clip is there's a man about the first 40% of the news conference, there's a man's voice, and then there's a woman's voice that takes over, but both of them are translating from Russia into English for the listening audience. Global News put this clip up, so anyway, they're international news. And anyway, about 40-50% through a voice will change the translation voice from a man's voice to a woman's voice, but that's still being translated on what Putin said. So here we go next.
The conversation was quite constructive, and I once again understood that President Biden is an experienced statesman. Our one-on-one conversation took almost 2 hours. It's not every world leader that gets this amount of attention. I mean, his predecessor was asked the same question. He evaded this. This president decided to respond to the question directly. And in this, he is very different from President Trump. But look at it this way. Anything that happens in our countries is something that political leadership is responsible for, and the presidents included. Who stands accused of what? Who's the killer? But look at it this way. Look at the American streets. People are getting killed there, including those who are leading the various political organizations. You can get a bullet in the back of your neck. A woman just ran away from the police and they shot her in the back. But take Afghanistan. One single strike can kill to the tune of 120 people. All right, assuming this was a mistake, it happens on a war. But shooting from a drone at an unarmed crowd, clearly the civilian crowd, what is this about? How would you call that? And who's responsible for this? And how would you call this person who is the killer now? Or going back to the human rights record. The Guantanamo prison is still operating. It doesn't even start to resemble what is stipulated in the international law or in the U.S. legislation. And yet it exists. Secret CIA prisons across the globe, including those in the European countries, where people were tortured. Well, is this a great human rights record? I doubt that. Would anyone here would agree that this is how you protect the human rights? But this are facts on the ground. And this is the reality of the politics today. And we understand that this is how it's being done. And on the basis of that, we respond. So when people get funding from abroad to stand for the hidden agenda of those who are paying them, who pays the piper. America has just recently went through a grievous chain of events after a certain African-American individual was killed, and an entire movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, appeared. I'm not going to go into details. I will spare you them. But we've seen pogroms. We've seen, you know, looting and violations and riots. We sympathize with the Americans, but we do not want for the same thing to happen on the Russian soil, and we'll do anything possible to prevent this. And it's not about me fearing anything. If you want to think that, can you please give the mic?
You didn't answer my question, sir. If all of your political opponents are dead in prison, poison, doesn't that send a message that you do not want a fair political fight?
All right, about my opponents being jailed or imprisoned. People went into U.S. Congress with political demands. 400 people are now facing criminal charges. They are facing prison terms of up to 20, maybe 25 years. They are called homegrown terrorists. They are being accused of many other things. 70 people were arrested right there on the spot. 30 of them are still arrested. On what grounds? Not quite clear. I mean, none of the official authorities from the states are informing us about it. So we don't know that. One of the participants, a woman, was shot dead on the spot. She was not threatening with, anything. Why am I bringing this up? Many people are facing the same things as we do. And I am stressing this. We are sympathizing with the United States, but we do not want the same thing repeating here.
With regard to our non-systemic opposition, and a citizen that you have mentioned, first, this person knew full well that he violates the law that exists in Russia, and he had to understand that he is a person that is a repeated offender. He deliberately violated this law. He went abroad to receive medical treatment, and once he went out of hospital and posted his videos online, a requirement appeared, but he ignored the requirement of the law, and he knew full well that he is wanted. Nevertheless, he came back to Russia, and he deliberately wanted to be arrested. So he did what he wanted to do. What can we say here with regard to persons like himself and the systemic opposition at large? Unfortunately, the format of the press conference does not allow us to have a detailed conversation on that. But let me say the following. I believe that it's pretty simple and it would be clear to everyone. And if you could just have an unbiased coverage of this, I would appreciate it. So the United States declared Russia as its enemy and adversary, and the Congress made it back in 2017. The U.S. legislation have provisions that the United States should support the order and rule of democratic order in our country and support democratic organizations. And it is all contained in your legislation. So let us ask a question. If Russia is an enemy, then what kind of organizations would be supported by the United States and Russia? I believe these are not organizations that make Russia stronger, but those who deter Russia. And that is the goal of the United States that they made public. So these are organizations and people that help implement the U.S. policy on the Russian track. So what should be our take on this? I believe that clearly we should be cautious about it, but we would be guided and we would react within the Russian law. As for cybersecurity, we agreed that we would begin consultations in this respect. I believe it is extremely important. As for responsibilities and who should take them, let me brief you on matters that are common knowledge, but probably not everybody is aware of that. U.S. sources, I don't want to make a mistake here as to the name of this organization, but the U.S. sources claim that the majority of cyber attacks are made from the U.S. territory. Then a second one is Canada, then two Latin American states, and then the U.K. As for Russia, it is not listed in this ranking of countries that see the most, the significant number of cyber attacks from their territory. That's one thing. Secondly, throughout 2020, we have received 10 requests regarding cyber attacks, attacks on the U.S. infrastructure. As our colleagues put it, these cyber attacks were launched from the Russian territory. And we received two such requests this year, and on all these requests, our colleagues received exhaustive answers. On its turn, Russia sent last year 45 such requests to the relevant agencies of the United States, and this year we sent 35 requests, and no response has been provided so far. That says that we have a lot to work on, and as for the scale of responsibilities and who should take them, it should be decided within negotiations. We agreed that we would start such consultations, and we believe that the cyber security area is extremely important in the world at large, for the United States in particular, as well as for the Russian Federation to the same extent. For instance, we know about cyber attacks against a pipeline organization in the United States, and we know that this company had to pay a ransom of $5 million. According to my information, they were returned some parts of this money from electronic wallets, but some parts of this money is still missing. But what does and what do Russian authorities have to do this? We face a similar threat when it comes to one of the key Russian regions and its healthcare system. And we see where these cyber attacks are launched from. We see that these attacks are coordinated from the United States territory. I don't think that the United States authorities are interested in such kind of manipulations. We need to get rid of all kinds of insinuations and innuendo, and we should launch the expert work for the benefit of the United States and the Russian Federation. We have reached an agreement in principle on that, and Russia is ready to do that. Lev Tolstoy once said, there's no happiness in life, there's just a glimpse of happiness, and do cherish it. I believe that here there can be no confidence and ultimate confidence, but I see that we've seen some glimpse of this confidence.
We can't be tricked by what Putin is saying. Yeah, we've got some problems here, but we've got the ability to try to solve them politically. So that's what we're trying to do with this program and a lot of other people that are broadcasters throughout the country. Now, next coming up is Brian Kilmeade. Just last night, he was had an interview with Laura Logan and Steve Hilton about the Wuhan lab and so forth. And this is coming out finally, but I'm just saying that InfoWars had this thing out about a year ago, over a year ago they came out with all this information. But the mainstream media is finally catching up, and they are doing it. So here we go with that excellent interview next.
All right, here we go. For nearly a year, Dr. Anthony Fauci talked little about the coronavirus lab leak theory, right? We know that, but did he pressure other scientists to do the same? You got a new report in USA Today. It reveals that a secret meeting happened in February 2020 to discuss COVID origins. Prior to that meeting, infectious disease expert Dr. Christian Anderson told Fauci the virus may have been engineered. But just days after the meeting, the article reveals that Anderson miraculously switched his point of view, suggesting the lab leak is a fringe crackpot theory. So what happened? Here now is Steve Hilton, who's been all over this from day one. You know that from his show on The Next Revolution, Sundays at 9, and Laura Logan. Host of Laura Logan Has No Agenda on Fox Nation. You see them a lot together. They're back together for us tonight. First off, does this story surprise you, Steve?
Well, no, because it's typical of the pattern of behavior we've seen from Fauci all along. So we now know, thanks to those emails that were released, that right at the beginning of this, he was told that it looked very much like this was an engineered virus. He then now says in an interview, oh, I took that seriously. I convened a meeting. We had an open discussion. He says that now that the emails are out there. But at the time, and for the last year, he hasn't said anything like that. He's been completely happy for the whole lab leak theory to be dismissed as a conspiracy. And the reason that he's been dodging and deflecting and specifically lying to Congress, as he did to Rand Paul about all this, is because he knows he's got a guilty conscience to protect. He is guilty because we know, whatever you call it, whether it's gain of function research, you can argue about the label, there's been this dispute about that. There is no dispute about the specific experiments that Fauci commissioned starting in 2014. They were to take bat coronaviruses to enhance their transmissibility to make them airborne and to make them infect the human respiratory system. That's specified in the documents coming from Fauci's Institute going to Wuhan. On top of that, we have public documents, and have had for months now, we've been airing these, which show the progress reports, which confirm that they carried out those experiments in the lab with the commission that Fauci gave them. And the final point I'd add to this is people say, well, how can Fauci, the great savior of the nation and the world through the pandemic, why would he do something like this? In his own words, back in 2011, he wrote in the Washington Post that it is a risk worth taking, in his words, to engineer a potentially dangerous virus in their laboratory. He thinks this is useful. It's an experiment that went totally wrong, and he's wriggling because he knows he's guilty.
And Steve, by the way, just on that meeting, they all agreed to keep what was talked about in that meeting in confidence. So we'll never know. Laura, today, on everything that Steve knows, I know you have something to go on with that. But today it came out, and yesterday as well, the Chinese are saying, we want an investigation of the Americans. The Americans might have started this whole pandemic. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, the Chinese are playing their strongest card because the Americans did have a hand in this. And as precisely as Steve said, this goes back not just to 2015 or 14 or 13. This goes way back to 2002. Coronaviruses were not originally transmittable to human beings. That was before the first SARS outbreak. And Dr. Fauci was funding gain-of-function research through NIAID long before it was farmed out to the Wuhan lab. What Americans really need to understand is that gain-of-function research was being carried out at North Carolina's Chapel Hill University long before it was farmed out to the Wuhan lab, right? That happened because it was deemed so dangerous that that's why it was banned by Congress, and that's why Fauci pushed it abroad to the Chinese. So the Chinese know that their best defense is to point a finger at the U.S. because the U.S. does have their hands dirty. And what Fauci has done is spin a web of lies and cover-ups, cover-up over cover-up over cover-up. It's like peeling back an onion. He's counting on the fact that we're going to peel back the first layer and find the first cover-up, and we're going to give up, right? Everybody's going to say, okay, well, you know, we proved that China was involved. But actually what he's hiding is that he was involved long before this, and there's a much deeper, darker cover-up at play here.
Yeah. It almost reminds me of, Steve, when we found out about the economy collapsing. We didn't really know what Wall Street was up to. We are now finding what science was up to, but go ahead.
Exactly, and I think Laura is exactly right. And then to further add to her point, I think the thing we need to zero in on now in respect of Fauci's behavior is the fact that, as Laura said, this was regulated because it was so dangerous. This was controlled. You had both the Obama administration put a complete ban on this in 2014, and you had the Trump administration lift the ban but replace it with a very tough regulation of this, so that any experimentation of this kind had to be flagged for a specific review. Fauci went around both of those restrictions. That's where I think we've got him, because that is professional misconduct of the highest order. There's an IG investigation for the HHS now. I don't know if that's going to be a cover-up, too. We need to focus on the question, did Fauci go around the regulations that were in place by the previous administration and the Trump administration to push this research that he was such a champion of?
All right, Steve, we're going to see you at 9 o'clock Eastern. You'll build on this. Go ahead, Laura.
Always.
Yes.
We'll get him in the end.
So what I would add to what Steve is saying is, because he's completely right about everything that he just said, and there's another part to this. How did that virus, why was it carried back here in 2015 to the University of North Chapel, to the laboratory there, to Dr. Ralph Barrick? He also needs to be in the hot seat here.
Next, we have Tucker Carlson interviewing it was a congressional questioning of a top admiral about this new book that's being required reading throughout the military. So here we go with Tucker and his take on it.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. If you want to understand a country's military, take a look at what its officer corps is reading. Military officers aren't just warfighters, they're trained to be thinkers, even intellectuals. Some of them have advanced degrees. In Russia, officers above the rank of colonel are required to read a book by a Russian nationalist called Alexander Dugin called The Foundations of Geopolitics. Dugin's book envisions a Eurasian empire with Russia at the center of it and then outlines a way to achieve that. In China, meanwhile, recruits are told to read The Origin and Goal of History. It teaches that China is successful because its culture is superior to the West's. Now, you might not agree with them, but these are serious books, and they promote the national interests of the countries whose officers read them. That's why they're assigned. And that makes sense. So with that in mind, what are American military officers reading these days? Well, let's see. A sub-literate pamphlet on how the United States is a disgusting, immoral country that must be changed immediately and forever. That tract is entitled How to Be an Anti-Racist. It is written by a former University of Florida professor called Henry Rogers, who now that he is rich and famous, goes by his revolutionary name, Ibram X. Kendi. The book is garbage. Actually, it's worse than that. Not only is it embarrassingly stupid, it is poisonous. Kendi's premise is as simple as he is. Any system that produces unequal outcomes must be racist, period. That's it. That's the entire thesis. And Kendi applies it to everything. If some people make more money than other people, then the economy is racist. If Ibram X. Kendi decides there aren't enough black astrophysicists, then astrophysics is, by definition, racist. If it rains in a black neighborhood but not across town, then what you're watching is weather racism. Actually, Kendi didn't really write that, probably because he has no detectable sense of humor. But there's no question that he believes it. The book is that militantly dumb. So how do we respond to all of this racism in the United States? Well, Kendi provides a solution. Quote, "The only remedy to racist discrimination is anti-racist discrimination." He actually wrote that. In other words, his book against racism promotes racism. Now, you'd think that might be a red flag for people, contradicting as it does the founding principles of the country as well as basic human decency. But no, the people in charge love the book. It's all over corporate America. You can probably pick up a free copy at your HR department tomorrow morning if you want. But the military, you can't imagine the U.S. military would assign a book like that, recommended to every sailor in the U.S. Navy. Well, yes, actually. On Tuesday, Congressman Jim Banks of Indiana demanded an explanation for this from the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Michael Gilday. Here's how it went.
Kendi's book states that capitalism is essentially racist. And Kendi is clear that racism must be eliminated. So yes or no? Do you personally consider advocating for the destruction of American capitalism to be extremist?
Here's what I know, Congressman.
It's a yes or no question,
racism in the United States Navy.
Admiral, you recommended every sailor in the United States Navy read this book. It's a yes or no question.
I'm not forcing anybody to read the book. It's on a recommended reading list.
Admiral, did you read the book?
I did.
Admiral, you said you read this book. What part of this book is redeeming and qualifies as something that every sailor in the United States
needs to read? I think
critical
about his own journey as an African-American in this country, what he's experienced.
Let me ask you again, Admiral. Do you expect that after sailors read this book that says that the United States Navy is racist, that we will increase or decrease morale, cohesion, and recruiting race into the United States Navy?
I think we'll be a better Navy from having open, honest conversations about racism.
Open and honest conversations about racism. Well, that would be nice. But it's an amusing line coming from someone who claims to have read Kendi's book, as Gilday says he has. Open and honest conversations are racist. Kendi said that many times. So let's say, open and honestly, you decided that you cared more about the way people behave than the way that they look. Let's say you took Martin Luther King at his word and judged people by the content of their character, not by the color of their skin. If you were to do that, Ibram X. Kendi says you were a racist. Quote, "The claim of not racist neutrality is a mask for racism. The language of colorblindness is a mask to hide racism. A colorblind constitution for a white supremacist America." That's the military's reading. So no, open and honest conversations are not allowed in Kendi's America. Here's the choice. You admit you're a racist, or else you're a super-duper racist. That's his position. It sounds pretty deranged, honestly. In fact, it sounds like an extremist ideology, just the kind the military is always warning us about. Keep in mind that tonight, right now, the Pentagon is investigating National Guardsmen who have posted unfashionable opinions on Facebook about the last election or may have voted for Donald Trump. So with all their investigators running around looking into people's thought crimes, how closely have they looked, as the Pentagon looked, into Ibram X. Kendi? Have they checked his social media history? Well, actually, Congressman Banks asked Gilday that question. Watch.
In college, Kendi stated that white people are a different breed of humans and are responsible for the AIDS virus. Yes or no, do you personally consider the conspiracy that white people started AIDS to be an extremist belief?
Sir, I'd have to understand the context.
That is a simple question.
Made. I'm not going to.
Admiral, this is a book that you recommended every sailor in the United States Navy
read. Cherry-picked quotes from somebody's book. I'm not going to do that.
Do you consider the statement that white people created AIDS an extremist statement? I can't comment on that. I don't need the context for that. So Admiral Gilday, what a mediocrity, will not defend the man he's just been promoting to the entire U.S. Navy. Now, that's odd, though once you dig a little, you can see why he doesn't want to talk much about it. Not long ago, Kendi was invited to speak at the Aspen Ideas Festival, a place where ideas go to die. A room full of academics waited to hear his wisdom. During the question and answer session, one of them dared to ask the most basic question of all. How are we defining racism? How do you define it? Now, you'd think Ibram X. Kendi would be ready for that question, but he wasn't. Here's what he said.
You talked about the importance of defining racism, but unless I missed it, which is possible, I didn't hear your personal definition. Is there one that you would offer us? Like, how do you define racism?
Sure. So racism, I would define it as a collection of racist policies that lead to racial inequity that are substantiated by racist ideas. Sure. A collection of racist policies that lead to racial inequity that are substantiated by racist ideas.
So racism is racist stuff. Or as Kendi puts it, and we're quoting now, it's a collection of racist policies that lead to racial inequity that are substantiated by racist ideas, end quote. Right. But how are we defining racism? Ibram X. Kendi couldn't say. Despite making a bountiful living on the topic, getting rich talking about racism, he hadn't thought how to define the word. Now, in a serious society, everybody listening, everyone in the room would have walked out and found something better to do. Bird watching, maybe. That's racist. Well, the so-called intellectual on stage turned out to be an idiot. So they should have left. But they didn't. They just laughed nervously. They were worried if they said something about what had just happened, if they pointed out that the former Henry Rogers was in fact a fraud, they would be denounced as well. This is how mediocre people control entire societies, with implied threats. Go along or we'll punish you. So they don't say anything. The funny thing is, in his own book, Kendi admits that he himself is a racist. Here's a definition. Quote, white Democrats stood aside and let Bush steal the presidency on the strength of destroyed black votes. Bush's team transitioned that winter. I transitioned into hating white people. White people became devils to me, but I had to figure out how they came to be devils. So this is the man that Admiral Michael Gilday, it's hard to believe that Admiral Michael Gilday has any power in the United States military, but he does. And this is the man Admiral Michael Gilday believes the entire U.S. Navy should study. Imagine working for someone like Admiral Michael Gilday. Most normal people cannot even imagine that, so they're leaving the military.
One Marine told us that a military history training session was replaced with mandatory training on police brutality, white privilege, and systemic racism. He reported that several officers are now leaving his unit, citing that training. Another service member told us that their unit was required to read White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo, which claims, and this is a quote, white people raised in Western society are conditioned into a white supremacist worldview. An airman told us their unit was forced into a racist exercise called a privilege walk, where members of the wing were ordered to separate themselves by race and gender in order to stratify people based on their perceived privilege.
It's depressing, if you think about it. Good people driven from military service, many of them serving generationally because their fathers and grandfathers did, but having to leave now purely because of the extremist ideology of its leaders. It's crushing, if you think about it. But it's also scary for all of us. We need the military. The Pentagon isn't the Department of Education. It's not the DMV. We have to have it. It's essential to the survival of the country. But the commissars in the Biden administration don't care. They're not slowing down. They are intensifying the political purge in the ranks. NASA just announced its new mission has nothing to do with space. The new mission is about applying the principles in Ibram Kendi's book. The new mission is equity.
We're going to end this first hour with an interview that Elizabeth Kennedy had with Representative Pat Fallon, and it concerned a letter by Representative Ronnie Jackson that was asking and demanding that President Biden take a cognitive test. I remember years ago when they were demanding that Trump, President Trump, take it because his hand is on the button, that he take a cognitive test, which he, you know, passed with flying colors. But here's that interview now.
Coming topic with Texas Congressman Pat Fallon. Okay, so there was a letter that was sent to, along with Congressman Ronnie Jackson, the former White House physician, to President Biden on Thursday that called on him to prove his mental fitness with a cognitive test. The letter was also sent to Dr. Anthony Fauci. What do you make of this? Is this a real thing?
Liz, thanks for having me on. You know, it's not just an isolated incident with Joe Biden. This is a repeated pattern of behavior. He's making major gaffes on the world stage. Now, he is the oldest president we've ever had in 222 years of having presidency, 78. But that's not the reason why we wrote the letter. The genesis of the letter was these gaffes. I mean, confusing Syria and Libya three different times, prompting the Prime Minister of Great Britain, Boris Johnson, to introduce the South African president when he had just done that, and which resulted in snickers and laughs in the room. This is the most important job in the world, and we need somebody that's at the apex of their mental acuity.
So he's had two aneurysms. Vladimir Putin, though, said he remembers and had his grasp of details of what he needed to do at the summit, that he'd never missed any details. Vladimir Putin thinks he was on his game. What do you say to that?
I had a hard time hearing you, but I think you said that Putin thought that Biden was on his game. Was that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Putin, he's shifty and he's cunning. And everything he does has a purpose. So he might be just trying to work around and maybe manipulating Biden into thinking that he's his friend and helping him out politically. But the fact of the matter is that all of us heard some of the things that he was saying during those summits, the G7 summit and then meeting with Putin. And I heard some of it. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. It was unintelligible gibberish. It wasn't even English. It was mush. So you can only hide this so long. And all we're asking for is to take a test. And if you pass it, then we'll move on. I didn't agree with Barack Obama. I didn't agree with Bill Clinton. But I never questioned their mental ability.
Trump took a cognitive test in 2018. The White House is saying they're going to release medical checkup results for the president at the end of the year. They are reluctant to talk about the president's mental acuity. Let's listen to Congressman Ronnie Jackson on this topic. Let's take a listen to this.
After this most recent embarrassing performance overseas, I thought it was time to come out. We can't sit on this any longer. I've been saying this for a year and a half, Sean. I took care of three presidents over 15 years in the White House, including being the physician to the president for both Barack Obama and Donald J. Trump. And, you know, I know what the rigors of this job are, both physically and cognitively. It's demanding. And after this performance, I mean, we've been seeing this for a year and a half now. I've been saying that Joe Biden is not physically or cognitively fit to be our president right now. And I just think that he's not inspiring confidence in the American people.
Now we've got the media going after Ronnie Jackson for his prior problems and scandals. What do you say to that? Shoot the messenger, looks like.
Well, Liz, Ronnie Jackson is not only an admiral, but he's a medical doctor. And he was the physician to three United States presidents. He's one of the most talented folks that we have, not only in Congress, but has ever served and worn the uniform. So what Ronnie Jackson is saying is I'd have to echo right now because the proof is in the pudding. And all, again, we're asking for is to have Joe Biden take this mental acuity test. I mean, Liz, I represent 765,000 Americans as a United States congressman. Joe Biden represents 330 million Americans, and in an indirect but very real way, an extra 200 or 300 billion people on the planet as the leader of the free world. This is the most important job in the world, and this is something that's too important to, just continue to go on with all these lingering questions.
So to the critics who say this is just a political attack, what is the issue that bothers you the most when it comes to the what you think is the problems with the president's cognition and his acuity? What one thing really stands out?
It's the pattern of continual gaffes. And I'll tell you very honestly and very candidly that there's a member of Congress, I haven't asked his permission to use his name, but it's a Republican member of Congress that privately told me he's known Joe Biden for decades and he's not the same person. He had seen him about a month ago and he's known him for over 20 years and he said, Pat, it's frightening. It's not the same person. So that gave me, room for pause. But then it's the whole world is seeing this. And Joe Biden, just get the test and then we can move on. This won't be an issue. But it's funny how they're reluctant to do it. I think that's very telling.
Interesting. Okay, Congressman Pat Fallon, thanks for joining us. Come back soon.
Thanks, Liz. God bless.